I went to 6 different dealerships. Number 7 was the one that finally treated me like a human. It sent me down a rabbit hole of discovery research. I couldn't believe that the second largest purchase a human being makes in their lifetime, being a vehicle, unless you're uber wealthy and you're buying a second home or a boat or whatever, or a private jet. But the average human spends, you know, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 on a vehicle. And I get a better experience with a $7 Chick-fil-A fast food sandwich or $8, $9 Starbucks coffee.
Hey gang, welcome to this episode of the Dealer Playbook Podcast. I'm here with my new friend, Katie Mares.
I love it.
I love it. Today we're going to be talking about how to elevate the experience to capture the world's most influential customer. Stay tuned. I want to thank this episode's sponsor, AutoFi. AutoFi helps dealers like you sell smarter, not harder, online and now in your showroom. Dealerships with AutoFi sell cars faster with higher satisfaction and more profit. Go to AutoFi.com/dealer playbook and start selling smarter today. The car business is rapidly changing and modern car dealers are meeting the demand. I'm Michael Cirillo, and together we'll explore the best strategies, ideas, and tools to create a thriving life in and out of the business. This is the Dealer Playbook. All right, Katie, thank you so much for joining me on the Dealer Playbook.
Oh my gosh, thank you for having me. I am so glad I finally met you and we are finally here.
We're finally here and we're finally real people together and friends. How about that?
Yep.
I had the pleasure of connecting with you at an 800% club retreat in Kentucky. You were sitting so quietly, just kitty corner to me. And of course, you know, that's such a tight knit group. And I'm like, who's this new? I recognize this new face sitting in our midst. And sure enough, we connected. And right from the hop of our conversation, you captivated my attention. And I'm like, ooh, we need to talk about this on the podcast. You're an author. You're a speaker. Mm-hmm. You're a consultant.
I'm all those things.
all those things. And not just any author. I see here a best-selling author. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
I was looking into your book. In fact, I saw a social post the other day from one of our mutual acquaintances, Bob Kane. Mm-hmm. And he essentially said, if you have not read Custom Her Experience, you are missing out tremendously. So I want to first maybe start here. What inspired you to put this book into the world?
A really awful car buying experience.
Oh, tell more. Yeah. Pray tell.
So my background is in customer experience. I'm considered an expert in the field. I've designed experiences for some of the largest organizations in the world, like Celebrity Cruises. Mm. So huge in hospitality, medical, travel, tons of clients all over the world. Well, I had to buy a vehicle. And so I went to 7 dealerships before I purchased a vehicle. The first 6 were the worst form of customer experience I have ever received in my entire life.
What set you off? What was the first thing you kind of noticed and you're like, this is starting to go down the wrong train track?
Well, first of all, walking in by myself and not being acknowledged.
Oof.
Full on being seen by the sales associates and them darting their eyes back and forth between me, my kids, and, you know, the car that my kids want to get into and honk the horns and do all the things. They were young at the time. Mm-hmm. And they would not approach me. And when they finally did, they asked if my husband was there.
Ah.
So
I'm not laughing at you or this experience. I'm laughing at your delivery, which I find so delightful. Just so, hey, gang, you know me, but I just had to throw that disclaimer in there.
Yeah. So I went to 6 different dealerships. Number 7 was the one that finally treated me like a human. It sent me down a rabbit hole of discovery research. I couldn't believe that the second largest purchase a human being makes in their lifetime, being a vehicle, unless you're uber wealthy and you're buying a second home or a boat or whatever, or a private jet. Mm-hmm. But the average human spends, you know, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 on a vehicle. And I get a better experience with a $7 Chick-fil-A fast food sandwich or a $8-$9 Starbucks coffee. And so I started to research the industry, try to figure out where the disconnect was. Well, then I also couldn't believe that from a female perspective, just how archaic the automotive industry was and unfortunately still is. And so I started to study the physiological differences between men and women and why men buy versus why women buy. And I started to study the industry in itself and quickly found out that the experience is designed by men, for men, and delivered by men because women are few and far in between on the sales floor. Yet the woman is the world's most influential consumer. So we influence $43 trillion of worldwide spending annually. We are the world's economy.
Okay. Thanks for joining me today. Let's just unpack some of this. I'm intrigued by the wormhole in this topic in particular, mainly because I feel like I personally cannot relate to it. And no, this is not an overcompensation comment here where it's like, oh, Michael just gets women. However, I have four sisters, no brothers. And growing up, my sisters were always like, don't worry, when you're going to marry someone, she's going to have brothers, that's going to be okay. My wife has four sisters, no brothers.
Well, then.
But I'm grateful for that because I feel like it elevated my awareness of what I think we all desire, which is just normalcy.
Well, like, yeah.
I don't want to have to do this thing where I'm like, oh, what a, you know, where you have to emphasize words to drive it home. Like I'm sitting down with Katie Mara's business leader, you know, where like, no. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So 100%. Talk to me about why or how you believe we got to this place to begin with.
Well, I mean, if you go back, I mean, back in time, I mean, women, the right to vote wasn't given too long ago. The ability to speak up, to work in, to work, period, to own businesses, to have a voice. It's actually like of recent history. It's not something that it's not something that's been around for a really long time where a woman can stand in her power and say, I am of importance. Men in the corporate world, I mean, the corporate world has been male dominated. And because it's male dominated, women have just sort of sat back. I mean, part of the reason why we haven't made as much advancement as we could and should is because of ourselves. I'm the first woman that will rightfully say the Mean Girls Club exists and we don't help each other. And men are actually far more apt to reaching out their hand and helping our cause. But we don't either speak up, ask for what we want, or take chances or risk. There's this stat called, I call it the 60% rule, where men will apply for a position, they will take a risk if they feel like they hit 60% of the qualifications, where a woman won't take the risk unless they think they're 100% qualified.
Interesting.
So part of it is us. It's not just the world, but the way the world has been created has been with a man in mind and women taking the back seat. But the thing of all of it, what we don't ever really look at is, you know, that saying, the man is the head and the woman is the neck.
Right.
Right. So even though he might have paid the bills, he might have been the one working in the corporate office, she was spending his money and telling, you know, where we needed it in the house, where we needed it for the children, where we needed it. I mean, with any decision, she was the one actually making those decisions, but it was just never put front and center. And unfortunately, we haven't really made any progress.
Right. We haven't caught up. This brings up a really interesting point because I feel like the word that is missing is the word counsel, not counsel, C-I-L, Because like to sit on a council, I'm talking about SEL, to counsel with one another. I look at the relationship I have with my wife and counseling together, we determined, hey, here are the seasons of our life. Mm-hmm. We want to have children. In that season, we want to have mother's influence at home while they're young. Mm-hmm. Therefore, we need you to go and provide income.
Yep.
Now that our kids are in school, we counseled through that phase and we said, okay, kids are at school. I'd really like to go and, you know, continue my career, but it was not an asking of permission. It was a counsel of which both parties, I am neither the head nor the neck. We are both.
Yeah.
And I know that's triggering all sorts of masculine, you know, patriarchal thinkers, and that's probably triggering all sorts of feminist thinkers out there as well. But, you know, one of the reasons we do this show, Katie, is it's a council. You and I are just talking and collaborating and exchanging ideas and finding consensus and poking and prodding and examining. But it fundamentally starts at home.
100%. Without a doubt, it starts at home. But I actually think it starts more with the individual human. Man or woman, if you're not willing to look inside and you're not willing to, you know, humble yourself to say, these are my strengths, these are my weaknesses, this is what I'm willing to do, this is not what I'm willing to do, and then communicate and or counsel at home and have those open and real conversations, we end up just standing still. And so I think it's much deeper than, you can't have a relationship like the one you describe, which is beautiful and amazing. And I wish more humans, not just from a marriage perspective, but like a friendship perspective, a business relationship perspective, could have that counsel type relationship. It starts with the individual. So from a female perspective, I feel like sometimes, and I've said this on stage, and I ask the ladies when I speak at conferences to be very frank and direct, and they always say yes. But I think we make up a lot of excuses as to why we aren't where we want to be, why we don't have those equal relationships, why we don't speak up. Well, we don't speak up because, you know, the job qualifications, I don't match it. Or we don't speak up because I'm afraid of ABCD. Or I'm not going to say anything about the fact that there's, you know, unequal pay, but I'm going to complain about it. And so I do believe there's a lot more that we should be doing as solo humans, the work we should be doing on our own and looking inward in order to make the change outward. And it starts with the single person, then the relationship at home, relationship in the workplace, relationship with clients. And then we start to see the change within society.
Interesting. Hey, I hope you're enjoying this episode of the Dealer Playbook. And before we hop back in, I want to thank today's sponsor, AutoFi. AutoFi helps dealers like you sell smarter, not harder, on your dealership website and now in your showroom too. AutoFi solves the everyday problems dealers actually face, like bottlenecks at the sales desk, customer distrust, and decision overload. Their all-new showroom solution includes deal estimation, desking, lender routing, and an F&I menu, all in one powerful platform. Dealerships with AutoFi sell cars faster, with higher satisfaction, and more profit. In fact, dealers make an average of $641 higher back-end PVR on AutoFi deals versus their non-AutoFi deals. Go to AutoFi.com/dealer playbook and start selling smarter today. All right, let's hop back into this episode. How do we go about now implementing this? You know, speaking, rewinding to your dealership experience and what set you down the path of thinking more deeply about this. How do we implement this at a dealership level to elevate the experience for what we now know is the most influential person in the buying process in a way that it doesn't feel overcompensated for, that it feels natural?
Yeah. So, I mean, I wrote the book based off of science. So it's, I literally break down the differences in our brains. I, you know, men are from Mars, women are from Venus. It's a very true statement. Men communicate with logic. Women communicate with logic and creativity. I took the emotion out of it. And I think that's what we need to do at the dealership level is to just realize that women are different than men, and we do need to tailor, tweak, adjust our approach to the female consumer. The thing is that a woman wants a wants a hedonic experience. She wants an experience of the senses. Her limbic brain, the emotional and memory hub of her brain, is almost double the size of a man's. So she feels more greatly, remembers details. I mean, if you have a wife, a sister, which you have lots of, any female in your life, and they, you know, come to you, they remember a fight you had with them in grave detail from like 5 years ago.
Sure.
Right? That's just, it's the way we're built. So I think the first step is just, it's a matter of fact, we're different. And that's okay. You know, Adam and Eve were put on this earth for a reason. Men have strengths that, you know, women don't have, and vice versa. And I think if we could just accept that it's not an emotional thing, it's actually a logical opportunity to be able to understand each other. Once you understand each other, then you start to, you know, dive into your customer journey. And you look at all the touch points through time. And I am a firm believer. So men like utilitarian experiences. But if you build a utilitarian experience, which is like point A to point B, nothing in between, no emotion, no experience of the senses, you're going to lose your female consumer. If you cast your experience net wide enough to capture her, then you won't lose the men. You keep both. Because men really don't care. I mean, they'll just go through the motions. They'll go through that experience one way or the other. It's not going to, they're not going to not want to do a purchase if somebody tries to get to know them and is more genuine. However, a woman won't go through that buying process if she doesn't feel cared for and genuinely cared for. And so you'll lose the world's most influential consumers. So I always suggest, because a big question I get all the time is, well, gosh, do I have to up, you know, heaval my entire process? Do I have to pull it apart? The reality is no, you just need to look at each touch point and create certain, I call it a brand experience playbook, but certain non-negotiable standards that elevate that experience for her. So it could be one, two, or three little things added to your already developed customer experience journey, but just speaks to her. A big one, though, is atmosphere. You know, from online to in-store, that end-to-end user experience needs to match. And a woman will want to do business where she can see herself in, so having female associates online and in-store, but also walking in and having an atmosphere that makes her feel comfortable. That's the very first thing that every single dealership should be looking at. And I always say to the men, when was the last time you went into the ladies' washroom?
Never.
Right. But women go in there and it will be, it's a number one deterrent.
Mm.
You know, I work with, you know, hair salons and dentists and medical, you know, practices. And how often I ask them, how often do you, you know, get your hair washed and look up at the ceiling? How often do you lay down on the bed where the patient lays down, and what do they see? How often do you actually put yourself in your customer's shoes? And that's where I would start first and foremost, is when we walk into a business, we see what we want to see. We don't actually see what the customer sees.
Sure.
And so that little perception change will lead to immediate results in a change in experience and a female customer satisfaction.
There's so many things that you just said that stood out to me. I think about, what do we do is, you know, from a sales perspective, what's the first thing we do? We throw our hand out. We want to shake their hand and we want to, hey, how's it going? Put her there, sort of a thing. Well, as you know, we were chatting about this. I recently went to Pakistan. Now, before all of you turn off because you think I'm about to say what you want to hear, it was a delightful experience. One of the things that I was taught is that you do not extend your hand to a woman. Now, some might be thinking, oh, see, here, because, you know, the culture and the... No, actually, what I learned is that it is a very women reverenced culture. When I told my mom about this, that you do not extend your hand to a woman unless she extends her hand to you first, mm-hmm. then it shifts the paradigm. You know what my mom said immediately? She says, well, actually, that's the way it used to be, and that's the proper way. You do not shove your hand in a woman's face. It is her prerogative to, and it's actually proper decorum. And then all of a sudden in that lens, I was like, huh, interesting. But what do we see in the sales experience? Put her there, partner. It's like, grab their hand and squeeze it tight and give it a nice firm. No, actually, if you just tapped into simple human decorum, you might be one step closer to the experience. You bring up the bathroom, same thing. Well, like, dudes don't want to go to a dirty bathroom. They just do because, to your point, they're like, well, it's logical. It's like point A and point B.
Least friction. Let's just do it. Yeah.
Yes. So I love that you say science and just a matter of practicality.
Yeah.
If you just implement these few simple things right out of the gates, if you just change your language a smidge,
if you just be a human,
right. Like, be a good person. What a novel idea.
Like, being kind is free. I'm just saying. It doesn't take any extra training, although I guess we all need it, especially EQ training. But I mean, if you really, like, if you just showed up and was, in, you know, a kind person. Here's the thing I get all the time. Well, why should I be kind? Why do I need to be genuine? I don't care. Like, I don't know this person, this customer in front of me. And this is a man or a woman, like just customer right. in general. Yeah. And again, I ask very politely if I can be frank and very forward. And I always get the yes. And I'm like, so who keeps the lights on in your house? The food on your table? The your son or daughter playing sports? The clothes on your back?
Right.
Well, I have a job. No, that's not what I asked. Why? Who pays your bills? The customer. And so if you can't genuinely care about the person that is responsible for giving you the life you feel so blessed to have, then you got to give your head a shake. Because without them, we don't get to do this. You don't get to travel to Pakistan. We don't get to we don't get to have the hard times, the good times, and everything in between. The customer is the only thing that matters. And so if you have that perception, and you show up to work every day thinking, okay, that person puts food on my table, all of a sudden the human factor is introduced. And now you care about this person. And if you care about this person, then it's easy to provide an experience.
Right. Ooh, this could be a whole second podcast because there's two camps. There's the camp of be good person, build relationship of trust. Mm-hmm. Then there is camp hustle, grind, burn yourself out and step on people's neck. That's the only way to get ahead in life.
It's the only way to surely fail in life.
And the challenge is now all of a sudden these two groups compete against each other because perhaps build relationship of trust group doesn't see the monetary gain as quickly as the step on people's neck. The step on people's neck group is too stupid to understand the wake of destruction they've left in their path and then wonder why they die alone. To each their own.
Yep.
But you have to fundamentally determine what path you want to take in life. And for me, I'll tell you, Katie, I like my sleep way too much.
Yes.
To be burdened by this idea of stepping on people's neck just to make a dollar is completely unacceptable to me.
I was speaking to, I don't know if you've ever heard of Dennis Waitley. Have you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was speaking to him last week and, you know, I was just so blessed to be on this mastermind call. There was very few of us and him. I learned so much. It was insane. But he said, you know, the Zig Ziglars of the world and the Brian Tracys of the world, he goes, I didn't make as much money as they did off the gates.
Right.
But I knew I wanted to focus on the longevity of what I was doing. And I wanted to be a good human and I wanted to care about people and I wanted to affect change. Eventually, he caught up, but it wasn't right out of the gates. And it's because he has loyalty. It's because people know he cares and then they stay along for the ride.
Yeah.
So if you want loyalty with your customers, if you want a returning customer, if you want to fill that future funnel with their family members, especially the female consumer, because she influences 3 to 6 generations. Ooh. Right.
Yeah. I love what you're saying too. It made me think of this. If we just took a moment to pause and think through it logically, this day and age, when it has become more difficult to know who to trust, mm-hmm. by virtue of that, it means it's going to take a little bit longer for people to genuinely get to know you and trust you.
Yeah.
However, to your point, there's longevity and sustainability there. There's 6 generations of potential growth, not quick, rapid. Everything's got to be so quick and mm-hmm. fast and effortless and yeah. path of least resistance and hustle and nobody will ever know how hard you worked and blah, blah, blah. It's like, dude, just take the pressure off for crying out loud and do the right thing.
Well, that's
when
it.
It's not popular.
Exactly. Or when it's hard. Exactly. When it's not popular, when it's hard. Because you are, I mean, if we all had a servant mindset, this world would be, it would change overnight. If we weren't all for ourselves, we would all flourish.
Sure.
But because there's this hustle, this grind, that camp, I mean, and again, to each one's own, how you decide to live your life is how you decide to live your life. But I can promise and guarantee the success that will come from it's like the difference between building a legacy and having immediate success. Like, you're not going to build a legacy by not creating those relationships and leaving a mark in the world. That takes effort, that takes time, that takes relationship building, that takes, positive intention and inspired intention. Success is great. Don't get me wrong. We all want to make the money. We all have to pay our bills. We all want to make $1 million. I mean, mm-hmm. which is not even that much in today's day and age. But doing it quick doesn't sustain.
Right. Having everybody hate your guts while you're doing it also doesn't sustain.
Right. Right. Yeah. You got to just do the right thing. And the biggest thing is do what you say you're going to do. A lot of those folks that are in that grind that, you know, need to move really quickly, they often, they don't actually do what they say they're going to do. And then they let people down, they burn bridges, they lose trust because they're always just trying to move faster, faster, faster,
yeah.
more and more and more opportunities without taking the time to actually show up as the human that people need them to be.
Sure. I was reading a book. So you met Emer, who's our chief revenue officer at Flex. Mm-hmm. He's a 20-year Marine, 20-year multiple combat deployments. And so I've never thought, and then here I am, I'm wearing Marine green Flex swag and all these sorts of things. I've never thought about military operations so much my entire life, but there's some certain things that I can appreciate. One of them you just made me think of, which is, you know, this day and age, when we're trying to get a gauge of like, is this really a good person or are they trying to take advantage of me? Mm-hmm. There is a war strategy that basically suggests paying attention to people's behavior to the degree where it's like, hey, this, like, don't question people's desire to be friendly or kind, but pay attention and observe, mm-hmm. because typically it's like an unusual desire for chumminess or an unusual outreach to exchange confidences,
yeah.
or, you know, things of that nature where you start to pick up on those behaviors and you go, ah, there it is. They're doing it just to get gain because they think I have something. And that's a perfect place to be if you don't give into that, because it means that they're trying to dissect actually what you're doing to see where the higher ground is, because it's so against their nature.
Yeah.
And we need that in today's world. We need mechanisms to know. And the reason I bring that up, the reason you made me think of it, is because I asked you, well, how do we practically do this in a way that's not overcompensated? And the simple answer, you know, kind of tongue in cheek, is be a good person.
Yeah.
But now extend beyond that and say, inward look. You brought up emotional intelligence. I must look inward and say, well, who am I?
Yes.
Who am I really? Like, oh, wait, I do that. I do this weird, like, unusual, out of nowhere chumminess or superficiality. Or how do I replace superficial with genuine? What do I need to learn? What do I lack that I need to learn? Because and it all stems from this first place, I think, which is desire. Do you even desire to be that?
Yeah. No, 100%. It's, I mean, those are all really good questions that every single human should answer. I mean, I live my life by a set of 6 guiding principles. And if it doesn't fall within those, if a decision I have to make or how I treat somebody or how somebody treats me doesn't fall within those 6 guiding principles, I'm out. I know how I want to show up, who I want to be, and how I want to serve others. But that's taken me a long time to get to. I've had to do a lot of inner work. I've had to go through a lot of hardship. And to be able to discover that, but not everybody will take that time to do that. I do believe there's a fundamental difference, and this goes back to, you know, what you were just saying, between nice and kind. You know, you're nice when you need and want something from someone else, and you're kind when you care about someone else.
Yeah.
And it's, you give without expectations of receiving. And I think we as humans should try to come over to the camp of being kind. Because if you're kind, then you genuinely care, and then you genuinely serve.
I love it. I love this conversation, and I want to just thank you for joining me today, sharing your wisdom. This was delightful. I have one last question for you, which is, how can those listening or watching get in touch with you and connect?
Yeah. I mean, you can follow me online, Instagram at Katie Mares. If you want a little peek into my life, that's where you go. In LinkedIn, Katie Mares, I'm posting constantly on, from a professional standpoint, stats and figures and how you can really elevate that experience. KatieMares.com. I mean, I'm kind of all over the place. So
you're everywhere. Katie Mares, I want to thank you so much for joining me on the Dealer Playbook Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Dealer Playbook Podcast. If you enjoyed tuning in, please subscribe, share, and hit that like button. You can also join us and the DPB community on social media. Check back next week for a new Dealer Playbook episode. Thanks so much for joining.